we've had a busy morning so far, haven't we? We've done a lot, but hopefully today you will hear a word from the Lord. I thought about what I wanted to do to kind of start as we start this year, and I'm just going to do a series for the next few weeks just called Inspire. Just maybe a word of hope as we step into a new year and as we try to do our best to let one year go and to take hold of the next one. And I want us to maybe be a little bit reflective and talk about where we are in things and talk about how we're going to step more fully into things. And I thought today maybe what we should do is we should start with the question that we all ask in some point in our lives. And that's the simple question that is, how's your faith? You know, I don't know, maybe we take stock of this each day as we wake up, as we step into the world. We have these moments where we reflect on how is our faith doing. And maybe we define our faith. I don't know, I have in the past. I've defined it as, do I have strong faith or do I have weak faith? And I remember even as a younger child, as a teenager, I always thought, you know, I better die on a good faith day or a good faith year. I better make sure that my faith is good so that I'm in the right spot so that when God comes that I'm ready, that I'm not having one of my bad or weak faith moments. Maybe as people we feel this way, that we've got to, that the burden of faith is on us, how strong our faith is. And as I reflected this past week on how's my faith, I thought about some times in my life where faith has sort of affected me in different ways. For those of you that have heard my testimony or heard some of the story, when I was about 12, 13 years old, I went to boarding school, and I stayed at boarding school for 5 years until I graduated from high school. And I'm not about to go into that or talk about some of the difficulties that I faced then, but life wasn't always awesome when I was there. But there's one thing that I remember with great clarity, and that is that my prayer life was better than it had ever been. In those 5 years, I prayed a lifetime of prayers. That there were days that I would pray for extended period of time, sometimes for hours. And I felt that if I reached out my hand, that I would touch God. He was right there. And I must admit to you that I'm sad because my prayer life has never been that. At that point, I didn't know as much about faith and all the things that I maybe know now. But that was a time when my faith was so tangible and so real, and I've tried so many times to get back to that prayer life, and I just never have seemed to be able to. Or maybe a time when my life was going pretty well, when I was in grad school and things were coming together, and part of being in seminary is they kind of deconstruct your faith. They sort of say, why do you believe this, and where did that come from, and why do you think that's true? And it's really quite jarring and quite difficult in that moment. But what I've learned about me is that I have strong faith when my life is weak, and I seem to have weak faith when my life is strong. When life is going well, I seem to keep God a little more at arm's length, and when life is going bad, I seem to put both arms out and try to wrap around him. And maybe you're the opposite. I know some people say when my life is good, that's when I feel my relationship is best with God. But for me, it's the other way around. And I want to dispel a myth that I think we've accidentally shared with church people, and that is this, that only strong faith counts. I grew up believing that if my faith wasn't strong enough, then somehow I did not have enough value for God. And hopefully God just caught me on a Sunday or a Monday, preferably not a Thursday or Friday, because by that point my faith had faded. And I think that maybe for a lot of us, this is true. When we assess our lives and our moments of greatest faith, it usually is because our lives are struggling and falling apart. And when life is going well, how quickly we forget God. Here's a truth that I want to share with you. Faith is an assessment, not a test. You know, sometimes we're at school and we take tests. Assessments are designed to let us know where we are. They're not designed as pass or fail. That's what tests do. And I think that we sometimes treat our faith like a test. Am I passing in faith or am I failing in faith? And faith actually is more giving us an idea of where we are and maybe affecting our behaviors. I think one of the things that we have to do is we have to start feeling our faith rather than rating our faith. I don't know if you do this, but I find that I do this. Okay, my faith's like a 2.5 today. You know, yesterday was a 7. I'm hoping to try to get to that 7.5, 8-point range. And what if we did this with our marriages? Go to your spouse. You know, today, honey, 2.5 today for the most. Hopefully tomorrow's a 7, you know, put some work in. That's how we do it. But it's something that ebbs and flows. We've got to make it a part of our lives. It's got to not just be an intellectual exercise. It's something that should affect everything that we do. We have to allow faith in. I want to share a story, a journey of faith. It's a story that we find in the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 12. It's early in the first book of the Bible. We know this story. The first story is Adam and Eve. We all know that. And then there's Noah. And then we have this third family that comes onto the scene, and it is a journey of faith for them. Their names are Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah, they got married. They're happily married. And they're people of faith, even at a time when faith is not fully defined by God. They're believers. They live with integrity and character and morals. And God chooses them and says, you are my people, and I'm going to use you in mighty ways. There's only one problem. They can't have a baby. They're getting older. And as Sarah goes to the grocery store and those little old ladies from church start asking her, so how are you and Abraham doing? We're doing great. How long have you been married now? Well, it's been 10 years this last July. Oh, do you have any other plans? Of course they did. But it didn't happen. Some of you know what that's like. They waited and they waited. And the excuses started to change. Well, we're just trying to enjoy each other. Just focusing on Abraham's job. It's very busy right now. But the years ticked on. And every time Sarah would go out, she knew she would have to face a barrage of questions. God says to Abraham, I'm gonna take you and I'm going to make you into a great nation. And Abraham says, excuse me, God, just one problem with that. Don't know if you've noticed, small oversight, we don't have any children. And God says, I am going to give you a child. And Abraham runs home and he's so excited to share this with Sarah. And he says, God has given us the word. We're going to have a child. Sure, we wanted one 10 years ago, but we'll make it work. And they started to have conversations, didn't they? What's next Christmas going to be like? We're going to take a family trip and we're going to have to drive this time because we'll have a baby carrier in the back. We're going to be on stage at the next baby dedication. And then a year went by. And another year. And another. And another. Almost a decade. Abraham and Sarah talk to each other and they say, maybe we misunderstood God because that's what we do. Maybe we didn't hear the word the right way. Maybe we've got to do something. And so Sarah comes up with the idea and says, hey, I've got this servant and you can have a child with her. I know it seems weird to us, but that was pretty common practice back in the day. And then we have the emergence of this new child named Ishmael, but it's not the child Isaac that God has promised. And things go bad because, let's be honest, if we were watching that story unfold, we could have told you they were going to go bad. It wasn't going to work out well. And God says to Abraham, that's not what I meant, but I'm still going to honor my covenant to you and give you a child. And we know that Isaac is born and is the delight of his parents. But then there's this very awkward passage in Genesis that we call the test, where God calls Abraham and he says, I want you to take your child, this one that you love, and I want you to give him back to me in sacrifice. And I kind of believe as I read the story that the waiting and the test was actually in them being patient and waiting for God to work. But they jumped the gun. They took hold of the story themselves. I think that's why we have the Isaac story where God says, I have to test you in this. I would have preferred to do it before, but now I'm going to do it after. And as you read the story as it emerges in the book of Genesis, we learn one beautiful truth, and that is that faith is born through vulnerability. Vulnerability is not a word we like. It's not part of our our vocabulary very often. We know when it's coming, and we try to ward it off as much as we can. But what we learn when we read the Bible stories over and over and over again is that vulnerability is the place where faith grows. We also learn that faith is not about strength. Faith is not about how strong we are. It's about something much bigger. As I was looking at these stories this week, I know that there's a passage of Scripture in Romans. Paul writes to the Roman church, and he tells them and talks to them about this exact issue. In fact, the subtitle in this text is Weak and Strong Faith. Now, I want you to think about this. Paul's writing the book of Romans. So what city do you think they were in? They were in the city of Rome. And Rome was primarily a Gentile city. But there were Jews that lived there, the same as we see with the time of Jesus. And as the church grows and emerges, you have two different people from two different cultures coming together. And while there are a lot of differences, one of those seems to have caused division. You see, Jews did not eat pork. They didn't eat bacon. And then they'd have a church potluck, and all these Gentiles would show up, and they would have bacon-wrapped shrimp, jalapeno poppers. You can tell it's almost lunchtime, can't you? Oh, that sounds good. That's good. And it's causing division. And Paul writes this corrective in Romans 14. Beginning in verse 1, he says this. Except the one whose faith is weak without quarreling over disputable matters. One person's faith allows them to eat anything, but another whose faith is weak eats only vegetables. Some of them have said, I'm not eating any meat because I'm scared that I'll get some of that. And even though it was okay, those habits are hard to break. The one who eats everything must not treat with contempt the one who does not. And the one who does not eat everything must not judge the one who does, for God has accepted them both. Who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. Maybe if we brought this into a modern day context, and I might step on your toes a little bit here today, maybe we could apply this to social drinking. Is it okay to have a beer or a glass of wine? Some people say yes, some people say no. And it's been a source of tension in our churches. Or politically, are you on the left or are you on the right? Watch what Paul says to these things. It says in verse 5, one person considers one day more sacred than another. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Whoever regards one day as special does so for the Lord. Whoever eats meat does so for the Lord. And they give thanks to God. And whoever abstains does so to the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives for ourselves alone. And none of us dies for ourselves alone. If we live for the Lord. And if we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. Then he finishes in verse 19. He says, let us make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification, meaning what encourages each other. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. All food is clean, but it is wrong for a person to eat anything that causes somebody else to stumble. It is better not to eat meat or drink wine or do anything else that will cause your brother or sister to fall. And then verse 22 is the big one. So whatever you believe about these things, keep between yourself and God. If you're a Christian, Romans 14 verse 22 should govern what you put on Facebook. It should be between you and God. He says, stop causing division. Stop causing problems because my opinion matters than everything else. He says, whatever we do in our lives, whether good or bad, is simply for the Lord. Notice something that Paul never says that only strong faith counts. He never says, for those of you that are strong in faith, let's help these poor weaklings and hopefully one day they'll get stronger in their faith and then everybody can be happy. He never says that. He never says, only if you're on this side are you good. He says, it doesn't matter if you're weak, or if you're strong. What matters is that everything that you do where you are is to the Lord. What we learn is that faith is born in vulnerability and self-awareness and acceptance of that self-awareness. I think sometimes we're so concerned with how good we are that we forget that when our lives are open and we are vulnerable, when we are at our worst, that is where God can do the most. And when we are aware of things that we struggle with and we accept those, God can use that place in our life. Maybe another way is if it's only when we're surrendered that God can really grow us in faith. Not make us strong in faith, just grow us in our faith. The journey of faith is bigger than knowledge and answers. Sometimes we think we've got a corner on the truth because we understand something a little differently than somebody else. It says, that's not the point. You know what I've learned? Is that even on my best day of faith, God's still got to do 99% of it. My bad days, my weak faith, we're talking about 0.5% for me, even though in my perception, I think I have a lot more weight in the game. Faith is all about God. It's all about the moment that we realize we need Him. The imperfect pursuit of faith is better than the perfection of faith. Sometimes people are like, I got all the answers. I got to figure it out. I'm a little embarrassed that my greatest prayer time in my life was when I was 12 and 13 years old. As a pastor, that feels wrong to me. But it's just my struggle. And yours are equally as valid. Not saying that we shouldn't pursue, that we shouldn't try. But we've got to be real about who we are. If faith is about strength, it's not about faith. Because faith, by definition, has to do with vulnerability and weakness and surrender and being poured out. It has nothing to do with how full we are. And if we walk around and say, my faith is just amazingly strong, we probably have to be careful because we might lack a little bit of self-awareness. What I learned this week, which was revealing to me, and maybe it'll give you a word of inspiration today, is simply this. I found out this week that strong faith is just weak faith plus vulnerability. It's us saying, God, this is all I could scrape together. But I know how imperfect I am. You're going to have to do the work. I'm going to try, but no matter how much I try, I can only bring what I can fit in two of my hands. Faith needs to be bigger than that, and that means you've got to help me, you've got to show up. When we accept that we're weak and that we have room for God to work, there's a word for that. Faith. I think we need to stop obsessing about how strong or how weak our faith is. We need to start thinking just about faith. Bring God whatever you have today. Might be a lot. Might be a little. You might have had a good run. Bring Him what you have. Say, God, do what you want with this. And I'm going to open my life. And I'm going to allow you to work in me and through me and mostly in spite of me. And God will do amazing things. We are called to be people of faith. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Just space for God to work in our lives. We will all do it imperfectly. The fact that we do it is what Paul thinks matters. Whatever we do, let's do it for Him. Father, thank you today for meeting us in this place. Thank you for affirming that we are not you. Thank you for allowing that burden to not be something that we carry. But God, I just pray today in this moment and at this time that we would surrender to you, that you are the God who relentlessly pursues us. There's nothing that you wouldn't do to be near to us, that we are the obstacle of faith. But God, today I don't just pray that we would feel guilt because our faith is not good enough, but that we will feel empowered because it's not about us, that it is about you and your work in us. And I pray today that this has been a word of hope, a word of inspiration. Not that we get lazy in our faith, not that we stop trying, but that we stop setting false goals of what we think you would want us to do and just surrender our lives in vulnerability and in faith. God, do your work in us in a mighty and powerful way. Thank you for meeting us in this place this morning. We pray this all through Jesus.